Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina. Glad to have you with us here on the Locked On Giants podcast. We are on a summer schedule, as you guys know, through the rest of June into July, right up until we start training camp, assuming training camp starts on time, and it's scheduled to start, I believe, on July 28th. So in the meantime, we are doing three shows a week with you, and it's time that we turn our attention now to previewing the various positions on the Giants. We're going to look at the strengths, the weaknesses, the expectations, the potential surprises, and just kind of how everything fits together, including, you know, the new coaching staff, the plans that they might have, which as of now, we still don't know since we haven't spoken to the coordinators and whatnot. But anyway, to help me break all this down on this special series is Nick Filato. He is a writer for GiantsCountry.com. He's a writer for Big Blue View. I believe he has a podcast. Is it Big Blue Banter, Nick?
Yes, it is. Myself okay. And Dan Schneider, CBS.
With Dan Schneider of CBS Sports. So Nick does a lot of stuff. He's an excellent film analyst. Really happy to have him to break down all this stuff. And Nick, let's jump right in. We'll start off with quarterback, which is probably one of the biggest spots on the Giants.
I would say it is one of the biggest spots, one of the most important, and obviously very heavily invested since the Giants spent the sixth overall pick in 2019 on Daniel Jones, and it was much maligned at the time. It really was, but going over that first season that he had, I feel like it was, national media, football media in particular, just haven't really given him the acknowledgement that he really deserves for what he was able to do with a team that necessarily didn't surround him with the necessary coaching or talent. I think his ability to keep the Giants in a lot of games, granted he did have a lot of turnover-worthy plays, he had a lot of turnovers, but what he did as a rookie was still eye-opening to me. I thought he was very solid, but people don't seem to be giving him the credit that I feel he deserves because they were making fun of Dave Gettleman. They were mocking Dave Gettleman when they drafted him because it was a little bit of a reach, people thought. That's what they perceived. So Daniel Jones goes out there, he plays relatively well, and everyone's just like, the Giants, they weren't a good football team. Daniel Jones isn't good, he fumbled the football a lot. And they kind of just wrote him off without actually analyzing how he was able to defeat certain coverages and how he was able to play in his first season starting. If his name wasn't Daniel Jones, I honestly feel like a lot more people would be saying, okay, this kid can really play. If his name was Sam Darnold, per se, people would really be talking about him in that light. Sam Darnold was more highly regarded coming out of college. Since his name is Daniel Jones, and since Dave Gettleman drafted him way too high, and the Giants happened to not be good in 2019, then it's really easy just to write him off and say that he did not have a good rookie season when, in fact, that's just not true.
No, it's not. And Nick, let's kind of explore a little bit more into Daniel Jones's rookie season and what he can build on. Now, obviously, everybody focused on the ball security issues, which was part of the equation. I admit it. And it's something he was aware of, something he worked on. What were some of the other things? Let's start with the things that as a rookie that he needs to build on. Like, for example, I look at his film and it looks like he threw on, I think, as a matter of fact, I even saw a statistic, but he threw mostly on his first reads, wasn't really going through the progressions. I don't know how much of that was because of the protection or lack thereof, or if that was by design. But what did you see in watching him go through his reads and picking out where to go with the ball?
I feel like he was much more comfortable and a lot better at attacking man coverage when he had to go against zone coverage. A lot of his interceptions were against zone coverage, and a lot of times it was him trying to squeeze the ball in with a safety coming down. He had a would-be interception against Tampa Bay. He had two against Washington that were like that. a couple against Green Bay, one against New England. He ended up having three interceptions against New England and three interceptions against Green Bay. But a lot of those fumbles that we were talking about too, I think it's, you got to analyze the entire offense as a unit. He does need to tuck the ball and secure it much better when he is flowing, like when he's on the second level of defenses and things like that. But the protection did break down a lot. But another thing about Daniel Jones that I feel like he got better with as time progressed throughout last season was just the feel in the pocket too. There were times where he would just be waiting for that receiver to come open, waiting, and then Nate Solder's protection broke down. And you know what? You can blame Nate Solder. You can kick him while he's down. But at the same time, some of those plays that he did fumble in the pocket, Daniel Jones was back there for long enough to where he should have probably felt the pressure and got rid of the football. That happened a lot against Arizona and the Jets, two games where he was pressured significantly. Okay, but I felt like he got a little bit better as the season progressed. He only played in a couple more games because Eli stepped in and played a few games at the end of that season. But throwing against zone coverage is something that I hope to see him improve on. I feel like he was somewhat confused and he waited. He just waited a little bit too long for the protection to really hold up. And at times he tried to squeeze the ball into places that he probably shouldn't have just squeezed it into. And it led to almost interceptions and some interceptions as well. That's something that kind of was really evident through those first six or seven games that he played in last season.
What do you think the most underrated aspect of Daniel Jones's game emerged to be last year?
I would say the most underrated aspect other than his athletic ability was probably attacking man coverage. And I know there's been a couple big NFL personalities who have talked about that, but we also did a piece on it there at Giants Country, his deep ball accuracy, especially against man coverage. He had a lot of trust in his wide receivers, and he would put the ball up in positions that were advantageous for them to go up and attack the ball, to climb the metaphorical ladder and high point the ball. He did this a lot with Darius Slayton, who he developed a really good rapport with, who's a fifth-round pick out of Auburn, who ends up being a gem for the New York Giants. And him and Daniel Jones just clicked, it seemed like, early on in Daniel Jones' first start against Tampa Bay. And I just Daniel Jones throwing against that man coverage, man, that's something that really was eye-opening. It seemed like he really trusted his guys, and he was able to hit the back shoulder throws along the sideline. He was able to put the ball high and away from the defenders, which really gave those receivers an opportunity to come down with it. And I just wish Daniel Jones had his full complement of weapons in his rookie season, because he never really got that. You know, Saquon Barkley got hurt. Golden Tate started the season suspended. Sterling Shepard ended up suffering a concussion. Evan Ingram ended up going down with an injury. He just never really had that full complement of Evan Ingram, Saquon Barkley, Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard, and Golden Tate. But the guys who filled in with Daniel Jones was able to get a lot out of guys like Caden Smith. He was able to get a lot out of guys like Cody Latimer, who ended up playing, that he came up with some really big plays throughout the season too. So that's something that you also want to see, his ability to click with a variety of weapons. And I felt like he was able to do that. He was able to use his athletic ability, and he was able to really keep the Giants in a lot of games. Just a little bit too little to get the Giants over the top, and they ended up falling short in a lot of those games at the end of them.
Nick, I know we don't really talk about this, but I want to get your take on it. How much do you think Daniel Jones is not having his full complement of offensive skill players on any given week factored into maybe some of what we saw with regards to game planning, schemes that they ran, decisions that he made, and so forth?
It definitely factored in. You got to think, I mean, last year, at least, there was a full, you know, off season. This season's going to be a lot different. But last year, he was able to work with a lot of these guys. He knew he wasn't going to have Golden Tate. But we didn't even know when Daniel Jones was going to start, because Eli Manning started the season. He started against Dallas. He played against Buffalo. And then it was week three against Tampa when Daniel Jones came in. And all of these really talented weapons that you heard about the entire offseason 2019. You got Evan Ingram. You got Saquon Barkley coming into his second season. No one knew who Darius Slayton was. He ended up being one of the most valuable. Then you had Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard. Well, Saquon Barkley goes down in that Tampa Bay game. And then he's supposed to miss 8 weeks. And what, he comes back in 2.5, 3 weeks? And he didn't ever really look the same. Granted, the Giants' rushing attack was inept last season anyways, and there was really never any holes for the guy to run through. And then Evan Ingram ends up going down not too much later. And Evan Ingram is such a valuable weapon because he's such a mismatch nightmare for defenses, because he's so athletic and he's so fast. And his blocking has come along too. He has become better as a blocker. Pat Shurmur tried using him as a blocker a lot. But Daniel Jones was never able to use his athletic ability down the field because it seemed like he was dealing with injuries throughout the season, and then he ended up getting seriously injured. And as for Golden Tate came in. Golden Tate had, 30 first downs on, 46 receptions or something like that? That's absolutely insane. You could tell Daniel Jones was relying heavily on the experience and the toughness and the savvy route running, the nuance of Golden Tate. So he was incredibly valuable to Daniel Jones' rookie season. And then Sterling Shepard ended up battling the concussion injuries, but it's also really big plays from him throughout the year. So I think if Daniel Jones had his full complement of weapons, it would have been better. But I still think he showed a lot without them. And you know what? This is the NFL. There aren't that many teams that had every single person healthy. Ironically enough, the one unit that was pretty healthy the entire season was the offensive line. That was the one unit that it's supposed to be so cohesive, offensive line. It's all about cohesion. It's all about knowing each other. It's all about, hey, if we have a full offensive line that's healthy the entire year, we can really, develop the cohesiveness to be able to play lockstep with each other, in sync with each other. And we just never saw that from that offensive line. It was just something that was really, really disappointing, to be honest.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina and special guest Nick Filato of Giants Country, Big Blue View Talk, and a bunch of other places. We're going to take our first break, come back, and we're going to talk more about the Giants quarterback as we get you ready for training camp by previewing the various positions. Stay with us. The Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. That's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000. To make your own donation along with us, please visit lockedonpodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. Hey, Giant fans, if you're like me, every so often you crave something sweet in between meals. And when I get that sweet tooth craving, I satisfy it with a Built Bar. Built Bars come in 16 amazing flavors and deliver all the sweetness of a candy bar without the high sugar or calorie contents. Covered in 100% chocolate, Built Bars deliver a healthy dose of protein and fiber that holds you over in between meals. To give you an example, my personal favorite flavor, Mint Brownie, contains 15 grams of protein, 4 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs, and is only 110 calories. And now, for listeners of the Locked On Giants podcast, you can try the amazing nut and nut-free flavors Built Bar offers. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. Patricia Traina here with you, joined by Nick Filato. He's a writer for Giants Country. He's a writer for Big Blue View, has a podcast with Dan Schneier of CBS Sports. He does a lot of things, and he's really, really talented. If you have not checked out his film breakdowns, do so. You will absolutely positively learn a few things. I know I do every time I read something, and just proof positive that you never know everything out there about this incredible game that we all love and follow, football. And Nick, we're talking quarterbacks, and I wanted to get your take for a moment here on the backup situation. Now, when Eli Manning was here, we basically never had to worry about him missing a game. I mean, he was your classic Iron Man. Nothing could damage him, it just seemed. And Daniel Jones is a little bit different in that, unlike Eli, who was your classic pocket passer, Daniel's not afraid to take off with the ball in his hand, become a runner, and put himself at maybe a little bit more risk than Eli did. So with that said, when you look at the backup situation behind Daniel Jones, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? And how do you see that maybe playing out in terms of, who might be his main understudy?
It's funny when you look at the backup situation, honestly, because they had Alex Tanny last year and he's still on the roster. Everyone thought, okay, Alex Tanny's kind of being groomed to be that long-term backup behind Daniel Jones, because Daniel Jones, he can develop this friendship with him. This, not veteran coach, obviously, but kind of like a quarterback who can help coach Daniel Jones, who gets to really understand what the game's about because he plays quarterback. So that's what everyone kind of thought. And then this offseason happens and the Giants bring in Colt McCoy, who's somebody who could really do that because Colt McCoy has done it at a much higher level than Alex Tanner. And then they come in and they bring Cooper Rush. Now, the interesting thing about Cooper Rush is he knows Jason Garrett's system. He was down there in Dallas. So when I look at those three, and then you have Case Kukis as well, or Kukis, if people want to pronounce it that way. He's a rookie. He's more of a camp arm, but he can sling it. And I think that's a very interesting thing to keep in the back of your mind. He might end up on the practice squad, but you look at the three, Tanny, Colt McCoy, Cooper Rush. Cooper Rush, I think, is going to have to make the team in this truncated offseason that COVID has kind of given the NFL. No one has a regular offseason. So we can't learn the new system. This is a quarterback in his second season learning a totally new system. That's like learning a new language. It's very, very complicated. It's very difficult. But if you have the reps in practice and the time at the facility to kind of handle it, then you can kind of expand the system and really master it. Well, the Giants don't have that right now. But Cooper Rush has been in the system for a couple seasons now. So what does that mean? I'm imagining he's more than likely they brought him in because he's going to make this team and help Daniel Jones and help the rest of this offense because he knows the terminology. He knows the vernacular of the offense. And that's a big thing, just knowing the language of the offense. He understands that. So I think Cooper Rush is going to be important to that when it comes to the New York Giants. And then you look at Alex Tanny, Colt McCoy. And Colt McCoy, he's spot started a few different times throughout his career. I mean, he played a lot with the Browns, played with the Washington football team. So I think he's another player that can possibly make that team over Alex Tanny. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of compete. I wish we could go and monitor how they are handling the practice reps at the quarterback position because, like you said, Eli Manning was that Iron Man. Daniel Jones, not necessarily. He suffered minor, heel injury, I think it was, this past season and had to sit out a couple games and bring Eli Manning back into those final two games that he ended up playing in his career. But Daniel Jones, he suffers an injury. You have a really serious problem on your hands, and it's more likely that he may because he does use that athletic ability. He does flood the pocket. He's not afraid to stand in there and take a hit if he wants to wait for a receiver to come open, and that could be a good thing. That could be a really bad thing, though, at the same time, especially when you have a fumbling issue. But I look at Alex Tanny, Colt McCoy, and it seems like, you know, just on their body of work, it's hard to kind of analyze it from the outside, but on their body of work, you would say, oh, Colt McCoy has done more in the NFL. He's been through more, and he's that veteran, savvy, smart player who doesn't really have a huge arm. That's not really his game, but who just knows the quarterback position really well and can really help a young quarterback, especially a young quarterback who's learning that new system. So Rush and McCoy can really do that. I think Tanny can because he's been there and he knows Jones probably better than those other two. But I think it could be really interesting on what direction they're going to go. And are they going to carry three quarterbacks? They actually might. That's not something the Giants have always done. But since everything going on in this offseason, you really need to focus and allocate resources to making sure you're maximizing and optimizing Daniel Jones. You're maximizing his potential. And if you need to bring in more quarterbacks to do that, that's definitely an option that needs to be explored.
What about in terms of the coaching? You know, we put a big emphasis on Jason Garrett and what he brings to the table. What do you think Jerry Schuplinski can bring to the quarterback's picture for the Giants?
I mean, he's been around the college game and the NFL game, so he's obviously coached a lot in his career. So I think his just veteran leadership and just being around in multiple places, he can assist Daniel Jones in his development. I mean, that's really all I can say. I don't really know too much about him per se, but just assisting him in his development, in his leadership, trusting Joe Judge. Joe Judge did a good job. He was very thorough in bringing in different guys. It took a while. Remember, we talked, okay, well, who's he bringing in for this position? Who's he bringing? He didn't just snap his fingers and assemble a staff. He waited and he slowly brought people in and brought people in. He wanted educators. He wanted teachers. He didn't want just people who are going to say, okay, do this and whatever. No, he wants the players to understand the system. So I think Schuplinski can really do that for Daniel Jones. And that's something to definitely look forward to. And we don't talk enough about positional coaches. We really don't. But you look at what Joe Judge assembled on this offense. I mean, even bringing in someone like Freddie Kitchens. Obviously, Freddie Kitchens didn't have the best go of it as a head coach, but he knows football. He was able to work himself up to a level to where he was a head coach in the NFL. It was a disaster, but can he be a tight ends coach? Of course. He's been around football for a really long time. He used to coach at, Mississippi State with Joe Judge. So it's just a a lot of football minds, a lot of teachers that are going to be in that offensive locker room. And that's something that I'm looking forward to and something that I hope can really be harnessed by this team, because we've seen in the past with the Giants, nepotism kind of run rampant and coaches that just, you kind of questioned why they were actually on the squad. And I don't really see that right now, at least with this Joe Judge team.
No, I actually like this coaching staff. This is one of the most encouraging staffs that I've seen since, I want to say, since Coughlin first put his staff together. You know, there's no nepotism, as you said. There's no, you know, good old boys club where, hey, I'm doing a good, you know, a favor for a friend of mine. And I'm just very, very encouraged. And I think that's going to make a significant difference in the team, if we are able to get games this year. Nick, let's take our final break. And when we come back, we'll wrap it up about the Giants quarterback. Giant fans, stay with us. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of cars and trucks, it's become impossible for retail shops to stock everything in a traditional chain storefront. So the next time you need a part for your car or truck, visit rockauto.com. RockAuto.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. RockAuto.com offers scores of different auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers for nearly every make and model of car out there. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and are the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so that they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. Patricia Traina here with you, and I'm joined by Nick Filato. He's a writer for Giants Country. He's a writer for Big Blue View. He's done some work for Inside the Pylon. He has a podcast with the CBS Sports Dan Schneier, just all over the place, but does a great job organizing everything and cranking out awesome content. Do check him out. He's at Nick Filato, F-A-L-A-T-O. On Twitter. So make sure you are following him. And we are talking Giants quarterbacks. We're kind of previewing it. And Nick, as of this recording, I don't know yet what access, if any, media is going to get to training camp practices. And I know you touched upon this a little bit, in the last thing, but assuming that we do have some kind of access where we get to see the workouts, you know, whether it be in person, whether it be via, I don't know, a closed circuit Zoom conference or whatever, what are some of the things that you would be looking for in Daniel Jones's drills and his just the overall practice? And what are you going to be looking for as signs of improvement?
Signs of improvement. First off, I want to see that he's understanding just not the rudimentary aspects of the Coryell-based offense that we're expecting to see under Jason Garrett. So I don't want to see just simple concepts. Like, again, this isn't, you know, day one or day two of practices that are open. This is, you know, as it goes down the line, you know, it's safe. We have a chance as the media to go and attend the second week of practice, the third week of practice. I would like to see Daniel Jones actually kind of comprehend the more complicated aspects and just kind of execute plays that maybe aren't just, you know, day one install and day two install plays. So that's kind of one. Two, I would like to see him kind of throwing against different coverages. So throwing against different types of zone coverages that are going to be common that he can see, different kinds of cover three, stuff like that, and just kind of do it with a little bit more confidence. Obviously, it's going to be hard to replicate what's in the game because you're not going to get hit in practice. And that's kind of a big part about this. Is sometimes when he goes up against zone coverage, he's looking and he's waiting for someone to pass through his zone and sit, but he gets nailed because his protection breaks down. It's not going to happen in practice, so he's going to be more comfortable to kind of sit there and wait. But I want to see that when it comes to him being able to kind of be really decisive in the pocket against zone coverage. And yeah, I would say those are the things that I'm really looking for. Another thing is just mastery of the offense, which is going to be difficult, to be honest. And honestly, man, like I said, it's like learning a new language, learning a new offense. And it's going to be hard without the reps, because that's really what one of the most important things in football is when you're at football practice, is getting reps, getting to run the plays, practical application. And you're not getting that right now because there are no practices and because of everything going on. So if we are ever able to go to a practice, I would say just seeing him grow within the offense. What I would really like to do is if we would be able to go almost every day, so you can kind of see, hey, day one, he throws an interception against cover two defense where the cornerback fit. He thought he was bailing. He ends up sitting on the route, throws a pick. But you know what? By day three, that same thing happens. He was able to put that stuff in the honey hole, or he was able to manipulate that corner and get him to jump on something underneath and then hit somebody behind him in between the safety, something like that. You know what I mean? Just an overall growth in the offense that he's learning, but that would take us being there for more than just one day.
Nick, when you look at the Giants offense, now a lot of people think that Jason Garrett's going to bring the exact same system that he's always run in Miami and then in Dallas, but Joe Judge has said, okay, we're going to tailor it to the personnel we have. So based on what you know about Garrett's system, how do you anticipate he might tailor it to fit what Daniel Jones does well and what he doesn't do well?
I mean, he did use Dak Prescott's athletic ability on zone reads and stuff like that, so I expect that to kind of be a part of the game as well. I think a zone read but you also don't want Daniel Jones to take too many hits, but a zone read with Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones could be really interesting because defensive coordinators, their main focus when they go up against the New York Giants, you really saw it last year, especially going up against a rookie quarterback, was stop Saquon Barkley. Stop Saquon Barkley. So when teams are really keying in on that, on the zone read, and it's third and one, that backside defensive end is going to be, you know, he's going to be prompted to just crash down the line of scrimmage. And you know what you do? You tuck the ball, you go right in around him, you pick up that first down. But I think he's going to do things that we saw him do in Dallas, but just he's going to be able to do more with the tight end position per se. Okay, Jason Garrett, Jason Witten, bigger, blocking tight end, not really fast. Number one tight end for the Giants, Evan Ingram. What is he? He's fast. I think you're going to see much more of Evan Ingram in the vertical game. That's kind of one of the bases of Don Coryell's offense. Don Coryell used Kellen Winslow deep, and he really kind of made that tight end position what it is today. At least he was some of the first iterations of it. And I can see Jason Garrett really trying to split the middle of the field and really keep those safeties on it so the safeties can't really come down in the box. Because Evan Ingram's such a mismatch nightmare that you can do that. What linebacker is going to be fast enough to cover him? Safeties could be too small to cover him. They have the athletic ability, but maybe a little bit too small. So if you were able to use him in the vertical game, but your protections are going to need to hold up. So Mark Colombo, you know, it's going to be really big for that. But if you were able to use Evan Ingram in the vertical game, which we've seen Jason Garrett do with even Jason Witten, even though he was more of, you know, just, you know, little quick out, little stick, little in route, stuff like that. But sometimes you'd see 12 personnel and Blake Jarwin would go on the field. But Jarwin would be stretching the seams. I think Evan Ingram would be much more effective in that role. But I also think this team you might see a little bit of 12 personnel. I mean, it's going to be more 11 personnel for sure. 11 personnel, again, is one running back, one tight end. 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends. I think you're going to see a little bit more of that, especially if the protection is a little weak in the beginning, depending on wherever Nate Solder plays. But if there is more 12 personnel, it's going to set up play action even better because teams, again, are going to be, okay, there's a tighter formation. Let's try to get eight guys in the box, stop Saquon Barkley. You get those linebackers to bite up, especially if the Giants have an effective running game. And then you can really use Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate on deep horizontal routes, stuff like that, to go behind the linebackers before the safeties. And if you get one-on-one covered with a cover one safety, you can use Evan Ingram up that seam, really occupy that safety. Then you have one-on-one man coverage on the outside. And that's something that Daniel Jones excelled with last year, something that Sterling Shepard and Golden Tate, with their route running, is able to get open. Darius Slayton has become a really good contested catch receiver. So I think those are excellent ways to kind of get him comfortable, get Daniel Jones used to doing things that he did last year. Pat Shurmur's pretty quarterback-friendly system. It was a pretty quarterback-friendly system. And this one, it's more vertical-based. So what does that mean? You might need a little bit more time to throw the football. So you're going to need better protection. But the Giants really put a heavy emphasis focusing on that offensive line. So hopefully, the Giants are able to get better protection for Daniel Jones, maybe give him a little bit more time in the pocket to hit deeper routes in a system where he might be taking some more five-step drops. Might be taking, it's not just going to be half-field reads. So he's going to have to get quicker with his progression, like we were talking about, especially when he's going up against zone coverage. And these are all things that he's aware of. These are all things the Giants are aware of. They're no dummies, you know. They understand the vulnerabilities. They understand the strengths of a player. And Daniel Jones is a very, very smart kid. So I'm sure that he is aware of this and he's working on this in his second season, learning a totally different offense.
Nick, final question for you, because you mentioned offensive line, and I want to talk about the center quarterback relationship, because I think it's one of the most underrated aspects of playing quarterback. It's an important aspect. You know, the quarterback and the center pretty much have to be of one mind, especially when it comes to protection calls, what they're seeing, so that this way there is not a, you know, there's not any type of breakdown and whatnot. Given the uncertainty the Giants have at center, and again, I project that Spencer Pulley, by virtue of his experience, will probably be the starter at that position, at least to open training camp. Whether or not he stays at that spot, I don't know. But can you just talk a little bit about that relationship between the quarterback and the center and how that affects the development, especially with a young quarterback who hasn't necessarily seen everything, like say an Eli Manning has, and you know, with Eli probably being able to overcome working with an inexperienced center or maybe a below average center. Can you just talk about that particular aspect of it?
I think if you go back and you watch NFL Game Pass from last year, watch the Cowboys and the Bills games where Eli Manning started, you'll see a significant difference than when you turn on that Tampa Bay game, Daniel Jones starts. Todd Bowles was able to manipulate that offensive line so easily. He was able to create 3-versus-2 rushers against Nate Solder and against Will Hernandez on the left side of the line. John Jalapio, he just didn't seem to ever be in the right place, or he was just getting out schemed, or if he called out a protection, he wasn't able to adapt to try to slide in a different way if there was obvious pressure coming from the other way. It just seemed like that offensive line after Eli Manning left the lineup was just never in sync. And that could be a credit to, obviously, Eli Manning not being there. But it could also be a credit to Todd Bowles being the great defensive mind that he is. So I think the center and quarterback position, like you said, especially when it comes to protections. And the Giants just never seem to be in lockstep with the protections under Daniel Jones. Now, I'm not 100% sure who was making the protection calls, but I'm not sure if it was a group thing. There were times throughout that season where Caden Smith didn't call out an obvious blitzing defensive back, and Daniel Jones ended up getting nailed, where John Jalapio slid to the right, the blitzes were to the left, 3-on-2 against Solder, against Hernandez, and that happened a lot. And Hernandez had this pretty lackluster sophomore year, I guess you could say, right? But he was surrounded by two players that were constantly kind of getting beat or just weren't really in the best position. And he was always trying to protect that inside rushing lane of Nate Solder, which was something that Nate Solder, you know, great guy, but he's kind of a turnstile last year. So Hernandez was put as a second year player into a really, really tough spot. I believe the center position is one of the most underrated positions on the offensive line. Having a sound center that knows where to go, that knows how to set protections, that knows how to recognize defenses. This all goes into film room. This all goes into study. And a center who's strong at the point of attack, which is something that I don't feel like the Giants have really had in a while. Not a center that's just going to stalemate a nose tackle or a one technique. Someone who can actually get a little bit of drive off the ball to allow a running back just that little crease when you're running in the A gaps to just run through that A gap, hit the second level and then go. Something Saquon Barkley can't do. And Jalapio wasn't that guy who could necessarily do that. And I'm not really sure Pulley is that guy either. But in this offseason, where we have, where the Giants have Nick Gates, the Giants have Shane Lemieux, they want to necessarily cross-train these guys to be centers. I don't know if that's going to really necessarily be able to be done for the 2020 season, because they've never really done that. I mean, Shane Lemieux started, what, 52 games at left guard? Nick Gates has played along the offensive line, but not necessarily at center. And I think the mental side of playing center makes it incredibly hard. The first person who's going to have a crack at that is Spencer Pulley, who's an undrafted free agent back in, like, what, 2017 or something like that. It was with Los Angeles, now San Diego, now Los Angeles, and he comes over to the Giants. But he had a solid 2018. He stepped in, played a little bit, only a little bit, in that last game of the season, and he filled in one game for John Alapio, but didn't necessarily, I think it was the Jet game, didn't necessarily open anybody's eyes or move many people off the ball. He's definitely going to get the first crack at the job, though, because the other guys don't necessarily understand the mental aspect yet. They're not up to par with where he is because he's been playing it for so long. But that's still my biggest issue with this offensive line would be that center position, the uncertainty of that center position. I would love for someone like Shane Lemieux, who can move bodies off the line of scrimmage easily. I would love for someone like him to be the starter. But as of right now, it seems like somewhat of a long shot just because there's so much uncertainty around how many practice reps these guys are going to get before week one.
We'll see what the future brings. It'll be here before we know it. So, Nick, I want to thank you, as always, for your expert analysis. Also, on for your analysis on Giants Country. Folks, if you are not checking him out, please do. He's at Nick Falato, F-A-L-A-T-O, and you can find him on GiantsCountry.com. So, for Nick Falato, I am Patricia Traynor. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.